All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And I'm welcoming my next guest, Miss Arnita Holloman. Did I butcher your name?
No, you said it perfectly.
Okay. Who is, you're the executive director?
Director of the City of Milwaukee.
Yeah, Director of the City of Milwaukee Office of Violence Prevention. Good morning to you, and thank you very much for agreeing to, you know, this conversation.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
All right, so for those of you in the listening audience who have no idea what the Office of Violence Prevention is in the City of Milwaukee, can you give a brief synopsis of just what that is?
Sure. So the Office of Violence Prevention is a part of the city's health department, and we take a public health approach to addressing violence. So understanding that violence is a disease, and so while it can be transmitted, it also can be prevented. And so our work is to prevent violence, and we focus on a number of content areas, so community violence or gun violence, and that's primarily Well, I'll go back to that, but community and gun violence prevention, there's the suicide prevention piece, family violence prevention, which includes domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, the youth engagement piece, and then the RECAST, which is resiliency in communities after stress and trauma. That's the name of that federal grant that we have, and that focuses on the mental health resilience promotion and trauma prevention piece of our work.
So for those of us who are long of tooth, who've been around a while, we remember a time when violence wasn't, or murdering, gun violence was the exception, not the rule in this city. And we remember in this city when it was one of the safest places in the entire nation for black people to live. And if you talk to a group of my generation, you know, we're now late 60s, and you asked us when we were, you know, in the eighth grade, if we knew anybody who had been shot, if one person would have raised their hands, we would look at that person in disbelief. Now, when I have that conversation with a group of eighth graders, almost all of them raise their hands. So this is a kind of a new phenomena with over the last 20 years with all of these murders by guns. What's created that?
Well, I think there isn't one specific answer to that. I think there's been a lot that's changed in our city over the last 20 or more years. When you see changes in family sustaining income, when folks have poor access to or less access, barriers to quality, you know, education, healthcare, all of those things, those are root causes for violence. When you see areas that are, we see concentrated levels of poverty, you're going to see higher rates of crime and violence. And so much has changed in our city over that time period that contributes to the rise that we see in violence. And so some of that is, you know, some of it is, you know, poverty. Some of it is political. But at the end of the day, we definitely know that what we see is an outgrowth of all of the things happening within our city and not one specific issue.
I know it's not one specific issue, and I didn't think or expect you to answer it as if there was an answer, because it is a confluence of things. But for, you know, where we are right now, all over the nation, crime has increased, and especially here in this city, especially with gun crime. The easy accessibility to guns, what role does that play?
I believe it absolutely plays a role. I mean, right now there's a lot of conversation around, you know, putting pressure on legislators to enact sensible gun laws. So, you know, universal background checks, red flag laws. And the more easy access that people have to firearms, you know, it definitely contributes as well. And so not just that, but also, you know, the straw purchases. So that's somebody purchasing a gun for somebody else who probably can't legally purchase a gun. Again, having those universal background checks is going to make a difference in that. With the pandemic, we saw a rise in gun sales. So there was a significant rise in gun sales during, you know, the pandemic, and especially during the, you know, that stay at home period. And so some of that is driven by fear and the perceptions of what might happen. But then again, there's whenever there's easy access, there is more, you know, risk or higher probability that people are going to have guns and use them.
So that people's fear many times is that this violence is directed at, you know, not at an individual, it's any of us, and that all of us should be terrified for our lives. But that's not the case. Many these shootings occur from people who know one another. Is that correct?
You're absolutely right, Earl. Oftentimes, it's people that know each other and have been involved in some kind of conflict, disagreement, something that has escalated and risen to the place where they're using, you know, guns to try to solve problems or end problems, which only creates more problems and trauma and all of those things. So, yeah, most of the gun violence that we see is between people who know each other, have had some interactions with each other. It is not, for the most part, where people are just shooting random people in the street.
You know, and that's, I think, a message that goes unheard. As I move around the city and talk with especially older people and others who fear around every corner that somebody is going to be waiting with a gun for them, and so as you guys the Interrupters, let's talk a little bit about that group that's a part of Violence Prevention, a group of people who actually go around in hot areas and talk to people who before something happens. Let's talk about the Interrupters.
Absolutely. Before talking about the 414 Life team, I'll just add to your point around this narrative that Milwaukee is completely, you know, an unsafe place. And, you know, some of that is driven by media and what we, you know, what we hear and, you know, how we access this information. And unfortunately, in, you know, cities like Milwaukee and urban cities, we often hear more of what's not happening or what's wrong with the city versus all of the great things that are also happening, and more often than not outweigh some of the other things that are happening. So that's all about narrative too. But then to the 414 Life team. So 414 Life is a program of the Office of Violence Prevention. However, it is not housed within OVP. It is implemented by a partner in the community at this time. It's at the Medical College of Wisconsin. So the team is employed by the Medical College of Wisconsin, and they are the implementor of the program, although it's a program of OVP. And so this consists of, so they're all kind of trained in violence interruption, but it consists of violence interrupters, outreach workers, and hospital responders. And so more specifically, the violence interrupters are working to mediate conflict and to stop retaliatory violence. So when someone is shot, there is a possibility that, you know, there might be some retaliation, or there's been some kind of disagreement or conflict and there's possibility of retaliation, then they will intervene and try to work with the individuals involved or both sides to mediate and to stop, you know, any additional shootings before they happen.
So how are they notified? How do they know about the conflict that is happening? Is there a number that people call and then they show up, or is just things that they hear through the grapevine?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So there are a number of ways that they learn about this information. So one, not all of the team, but some of the team members have, you know, for many of them, they have been on the other side of things. So they've been the folks that have been in the community at one point in their lives, kind of wreaking some of this havoc and been a part of street organizations. And so they know kind of intimately kind of how these things happen. But not just that, they have the credibility and the influence in the community, in the streets. And so they know folks, and they're able, because they have the credibility and influence, they're able to get information, and people will reach out to them, you know, directly to let them know about something that's going on. Also, you know, people may call. Community members can also call if there's a conflict brewing that may result in gun violence. They can call and request, you know, or give them the information and request some assistance there. But the main thing is that they are able to both connect with folks who may be involved because of their credibility and influence, and then to stop those things from happening before they happen or intervene so that there isn't further gun violence. And so, again, multiple ways. Sometimes they're hearing it from the street, they're hearing it from other people they know, other organizations, or community members may even call and ask for assistance.
You know, I don't have to tell you the aftermath of all of this terror in our neighborhoods and in our communities to families. You even got people who interact and talk with them, right?
Yeah, so there are outreach workers that are out on the, you know, ground every day, you know, in the target areas, connecting with community members, neighbors, business owners. But then there's also Tania, who's the hospital responder, and they're in the process of hiring four additional hospital responders. But when someone is shot, she gets a page, so from Freighter, so that's a collaboration between OVP, Freighter, and the medical college, but she'll get a page when someone's shot, and she works directly with that victim if possible and their family, but also listening in to just get a gauge if there is potential for retaliation, and she'll engage the rest of the team in that. And so she's helping them, helping that survivor through the process. And so some of that is connecting them to resources in the community to help with their healing process, and some of it may be advocating for them right there in the hospital. And so there are a number of ways that the team does some follow-up kind of connection with survivors to help them through the process.
So can you hang on a second? We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. I'm joined by Ms. Arnetta Holloman, and she is the director of the city's Office of Violence Prevention. We'll be right back.